Case for argument this morning, Hollins v. Leibel. Mr. Truden?
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Daniel Troyden. I represent the appellant David Hollins in this case. I'd like to first direct the Court's attention to the trial issues Mr. Hollins raised on appeal. First, at the voir dire hearing, the District Court made no inquiry into the racial bias of the jury veneer, notwithstanding the fact that there was clear racial issues implicated by the fact that the arresting officers were white and the arrestee was black. Second, the District Court prohibited any cross-examination of a key party witness into a prior misstatement in a police report that the policeman filed, and it directly was related to his character for truthfulness and his credibility. Third, the District Court failed to instruct the jury on resisting and obstructing an officer. And that was, of course, directly relevant to the jury's consideration of probable cause. Moving to the voir dire issue, if there ever was a case that required an inquiry into the jury's racial bias, this would be the one. Mr. Hollins was an African-American professional photographer. The arresting officers were white, and this was a civil rights case dealing with whether the police officers had the right to move Mr. Hollins along, or Mr. Hollins had the right to refuse that order. As the Supreme Court said in Rosales-Lopez versus the United States, there is no rational possibility of racial prejudice. And Mr. Hollins was entitled to a rational jury.
What questions were submitted to the judge that were rejected?
There was only one, in fact. The question read like this: how many of you believe African Americans have a tendency to commit crime more than other people? And it wasn't an implication on that Mr. Hollins had committed a crime, but
this is the question that you wanted the jury to hear?
We wanted that requested. We wanted the district court to ask that question of the jury to basically draw out whether there was any racial bias.
You can't think of any better way to phrase the question that wouldn't be so insulting?
Well, it might have been. I guess there may have been a different way to phrase it, but the fact was that
that was the only question that was requested.
Right. Right. And it could have been rephrased, but the fact was is that the district court rejected the question outright and did not even consider any variations of the question.
When you say he did not consider any variations, is that because none were submitted?
Yeah, no, there were none submitted.
So it isn't a refusal to consider a rephrasing. It's just none was submitted.
Right, none was submitted. And moving on to the cross-examination issue, one of the key party witnesses, the Officer Ritt, had presented or had previously filed in another case, not related to this one, a false police report. There was an investigation, but the investigation was closed down before Officer Ritt was disciplined, or in fact before the disciplinary hearings ended. And Hollins' counsel sought to cross-examine him on this false statement. When he introduced that, when he asked the question, there was an immediate objection. And what followed was several pages in the transcript of a discussion between counsel and the district court regarding whether this was an appropriate area for inquiry. credibility is always at issue in a case, and Hollins submits that he was entitled to cross-examine this key party witness. As in the United States v. Hinkson case that was cited in our briefs, one of the witnesses in that case, Mr. Swisher, was a key party witness, and he was denied cross-examination on some of his misstatements regarding his military record. And in this case, the court said that Rule 608B, which was the basis for the district court's denial, does not prohibit cross-examination. So in Collins' view, this was an abuse of discretion because he used an improper rule to deny Hollins the right to cross-examine a key party witness on his credibility. Moving to the final trial issue, which was the jury instruction issue, the district court failed to submit Hollins' requested jury instruction on resistance and obstruction. Hollins requested that a jury instruction be given, basically that says a verbal refusal to comply with the officer's order is not sufficient, nor is disagreement with the officer's order resistance or obstruction. A physical act of force is necessary to constitute resistance. Nothing in the jury instructions that were that also covered this issue, and therefore when the jury was considering probable cause, whether the officers had probable cause to arrest Mr. Hollins, they were considering an incorrect definition of resisting and obstruction.
Did the jury know that he had been found guilty in a municipal court of the resisting?
No, I do not believe they did.
Well, that's important. I couldn't figure that out by reading what happened here.
Right. That was an issue before trial when the city filed a motion for basically to dismiss on res judicata collateral estoppel. But the district court held correctly that it was not appropriate to dismiss the case on those grounds because the municipal court.
Well, I understand that wouldn't have been a Heck v. Humphrey bar to proceeding with the civil case, but whether or not the jury knew he had been convicted in municipal court, that's pretty unclear here.
Right, I must ask my forgiveness. I don't know exactly if that was in the record or not, for the trial record, I mean. The fact was that during the trial, the witnesses all gave their own impressions about what obstruction and resisting constituted. And the witnesses all gave differing definitions. For example, Officer Leibel said that failing to abide an officer's order is a violation of the ordinance. And then in closing arguments, the city defendants argued that disobeying a police order is a violation of the statute. And then ultimately there was no direction from the court about whether disobeying an officer's order was obstruction or resisting. If you go back to Welch and Hamilton, those are the two cases in Wisconsin that control the definition of resisting, and in Hamilton regarding obstruction. The resisting statute, actually, you just can't expect a lay juror to understand what resisting means when, in Welch, the defendant picked up a stick and said, "I'm going to split your brains out," to the policeman, and that was not considered resisting the officer. Resisting the officer is making an action towards the officer, and at best, in this case, I found Officer Ritt's testimony saying that at one point, Hollins stood in a defiant posture, which is not in any stretch of the means resisting, because there was no step. In fact, in the Welch case also, once the officer attempted to retrieve the horses, he was executing a Levin order, the person picked up stones and was actually throwing them at the horses and chased off the horses. And because that action was directed at the horses and not the officer, there was no resisting. It's in Collins' instruction, he requested that a physical act of force is necessary to constitute resisting arrest. And then in the obstruction issue, there are two ways to obstruct, the first being giving false information with the intent to deceive. That's not implicated in this case at all. The other one is obstruction, but for obstruction, you have to actually affect the performance of the officer's duties. So in this case, Collins, you know, did not obstruct and did not resist. And at least if you read through the trial transcript, that at least that there is sufficient evidence to support the jury instruction. So the denial of that was also an abuse of discretion and warrants reversal and remand. I'd like to move to the pretrial. We appeal one, a couple of pretrial issues. And they regard a summary judgment. When the city filed its summary judgment motion, they submitted a fact which actually makes Holland's case for them. In fact, it is the Monell claim. And I'd like to read that. I have it. It's only one sentence, if I might. It's on document 41 in the record, fact number 11. The city said, Milwaukee Police Department officers are trained that they may use verbal commands and order a citizen to move from a public place when they, the police officers, believe that such movement is necessary for the safety and well-being of the citizen.
Or the police. The citizen or the police or the other police. People in the area.
Right. And, you know, I guess to serve and protect, you know, that sounds good, except in this case when you put all of the discretion in the hands of the officers, you leave the citizens, like they say in Morales and Shuttlesworth, without any guidance about whether their actions are legal and whether the order that they're receiving is actually justified. When considering the district court, when considering Holland's qualified immunity claim, which he rejected, he held that the decision to go across the street where there was traffic.
He didn't really reject it. He saw there was an issue of fact here. And
right.
Holland says that the police beat him and pepper sprayed him, and the police denied that and subsequently had a jury trial on those issues, and the jury didn't see it your way.
Right, but I would also submit respectfully that the
jury was. Did you try the case or did somebody else try?
Someone else tried the case. Attorney Barnes wasn't able to make it today, so I'm filling in. The jury did state under Holland's version of the facts that, and of course we're still at the summary judgment stage with regards to this officer about whether the city had Monell liability for failure to train and supervise. And so for the fact that under Holland's version of the facts, he was not entitled to qualified immunity because his belief that Collins was in danger was not objectively reasonable. I guess the question remains about whether it was a result of his training or not. And I believe that an issue of fact remained during summary judgment, that there was an issue of fact with regards to this statement. The problem, the district court required more evidence than he should have because, well, first, on its plain face, this statement that police officer, the Milwaukee Police Department trains its officers that they can move someone along based on their subjective beliefs. If you would codify that into a statute, or you know the general substance of that, it would be facially unconstitutional under both Morales and Shuttlesworth. And it doesn't become more constitutional just because here it's a mere policy of the city. In the district court applied the city of Canton, which is the deliberate indifference case.
You're into your rebuttal time now, you know.
Okay. And then I'll
finish. All right with me. You can go ahead.
Okay. I'm almost done with it. I just want to touch on the city of Canton, and I'll be done. And the city of Canton set forth a two-part question. And in that test, the first part is whether that training program is adequate, and if it's not, then the second part is the question becomes whether an inadequate training can justifiably be said to represent the city policy. The district court, on page 19 of the brief, of his order, I should say, set forth two examples just beneath this test. And then applied them on page 20 of the of his order. That's where he applied the fact, the law to the facts, but he applied them in an exclusive manner and not just a mere example that was intended by the city of Canton. So he never went up to the original test and looked. And if you apply this here, whether the training program is adequate, it clearly was not. And second, is it justifiably said to be city policy? I believe at the summary judgment stage, the factual inferences go to Hollins, and you get that too. Unless the court has other questions, I'd reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Lappin.
This case stems from the execution of a narcotics-related search warrant by Milwaukee police officers back in 2002. It was a situation where there was a known drug dealer located in a home. Information or intelligence known to the team that was going to execute the warrant indicated that this person was known to have high-powered rifles and weapons in the home. Dogs was a dangerous person. There was also intelligence which indicated that that person had lookouts or informants in that area, in that neighborhood where the house was located. Officers arrived on scene to execute that search warrant. Part of the team, or members of the team that day, were officers Charles Liebel and Demetrius Ritt. They acted as containment officers. Their job was to stand outside of the home when the entry team went in, to make sure people didn't flee, to make sure drugs or paraphernalia were not thrown out of the home, and to otherwise keep the area safe for the officers, for citizens, for themselves. Their containment area included the yard and area around the home, in addition to the area located directly in front of the home. As the officers are maintaining containment at about the most dangerous point in time in these events, when the entry team was making its entry into the home, Officer Liebel made observation of Mr. Holland standing across the street. He was located directly in front of the home. There were not other individuals present. Officer Liebel was concerned that this person was somehow affiliated with the drug dealer. He made motion and used words telling that individual, Mr. Holland, to just move along, get to the end of the block. There are about three homes or three houses away from the corner. His intent was to get this man away from the direct line of fire outside the front of that house. Mr. Hollins did not leave. There were plenty of personnel containing the home, so Officer Liebel then proceeded across the street when Mr. Hollins refused to leave. There was a verbal interaction between the two. Mr. Hollins stood his ground. He said he didn't have to leave. He had the right to be there. Officer Liebel indicated that it wasn't safe for him to be there and that he needed to leave. Mr. Hollins turned, walked a few steps, turned, stood defiantly, and said, "I don't have to leave," and mixed some profanity in with his position. At that point in time, the officer determined that he was violating a lawful order and made the determination that he would take him into custody. In the course of effecting that arrest and taking him into custody, there was a struggle. Pepper spray was used. Mr. Hollins was taken into custody rather quickly, handcuffed, and removed from the scene. The issues that went to trial were whether or not the use of force was reasonable, and whether or not the officer, Officer Liebel, had probable cause to effect that arrest. The arrest was made pursuant to the city's obstructing and resisting ordinance. It was not made pursuant to any loitering ordinance or statute. With regard to the trial issues in this case, I believe that the judge did not abuse his discretion and rather made appropriate rulings relative to the issues that are challenged before the court now. With regard to the initial issue about voir dire questions, the court had given the parties ample opportunity prior to trial to present the court with voir dire questions. They were reviewed in great detail during the course of the pretrial preparation meeting and hearing with the court. In the context of the actual voir dire process itself, counsel for the plaintiff did propose or submit some handwritten voir dire questions. The one at issue was included within those instructions. I believe that the judge acted appropriately in not asking that particular question of the jury pool. First of all, this wasn't a criminal case. Second of all, this was not a case where there was a racial issue that was raised. There was no claim by Mr. Hollins that he was treated differently or unusually because of his race. In fact, discovery showed us in this case that, yes, Mr. Hollins was an African-American man, Officer Liebel, who was the key person in making the arrest decision and who also effected the arrest himself. He's a white Caucasian officer, but he's married to an African-American woman. There was absolutely no issue in this case that he acted because of racial animus because Mr. Hollins was a black man. Furthermore, to submit the jury to the jury the voir dire question as it was phrased would have been confusing, would have raised a racial issue, I believe, rather than keeping this jury focused on the two key issues, whether the officers had probable cause to effect that arrest and whether excessive force was used. With regard to the issue regarding the questioning of Officer Ritt, yes, there was a circumstance that occurred during the course of Officer Ritt's employment with the City of Milwaukee Police Department. Officer Ritt was also a reservist with the United States Army, and at about the same time the matter was under investigation, he received an opportunity to work in basically anti-terrorist operations and took that opportunity and resigned from the Milwaukee Police Department. In fact, at this time, I believe he's serving our country in Afghanistan. With regard to the issue, there was never any determination or finding that Officer Ritt had perjured himself, filed a false police report, anything of that nature. Officer Ritt was a narcotics officer, and my understanding is there was a form that was submitted, and there was some evidence that was placed on a form, and Officer Ritt was concerned that if he identified who gave him this evidence, which was his confidential informant, that he would put his confidential informant at risk. It was Officer Ritt who brought that information to the attention of the district attorney that was handling the underlying matter, and the district attorney, out of concern that information that was not accurate was placed on a report or an inventory, triggered an investigation. There was never any finding, though, that he perjured himself, lied at investigation, did not testify honestly in any matter. And again, at the time he resigned to take his position with the federal government, there had been no such finding. So I believe that Judge Moody acted very much within his discretion in determining that it was inappropriate to broach this area of questioning with Officer Ritt. In fact, I had brought motions in limine prior to trial. The judge at that time was Judge Clavert, ruled in my favor, ordered that that information was not to be brought before the jury. And counsel, first question out of his mouth in cross-examining Officer Ritt, started to ask him that question. And I objected, and the judge did allow the one question to stand, and it was a question to the effect of whether he resigned under allegations of misrepresentation or something of that nature. And the judge did allow the answer to go before the jury, and that answer was no. And it was a truthful answer. When he resigned, he had not been found to have been dishonest. The final trial issue was this issue regarding the jury instruction. Again, this case centered on use of excessive force and probable cause to arrest. It was not a criminal case against Mr. Hollins as to whether or not he violated that ordinance. And so I believe that the judge acted within his discretion. He kept the jury instructions tied closely to the issues to be decided, tied closely to the evidence that was presented to them. And giving the jury this proposed instruction relative to definitions of the terms, the obstructing ordinance would have only confused them. Again, they weren't there to decide whether or not Mr. Hollins had violated that ordinance. They were there to decide the probable cause to arrest and excessive use of force issues. So all in all, I believe that the decisions that Judge Moody made in the course of trial were appropriate. They were consistent with the evidence, consistent with the law, consistent with the whole nature of this case as it proceeded to trial, and I believe he did not abuse his discretion and certainly committed no abuse that would warrant a reversal of the jury's verdict. With regard to the summary judgment proceedings, with regard to the Monell claim, you know, The claim that was presented in the amended complaint, the claim that was litigated throughout the course of discovery through summary judgment, was the claim as to whether or not the MPD unlawfully trained its officers regarding relevant subject matter. In the amended complaint, one of the allegations was that they unlawfully trained officers regarding the crime of loitering. This case didn't involve the commission of a crime. Mr. Hollins was charged with a municipal ordinance violation, which is a forfeiture. It's not a crime. And also, it didn't involve loitering. So the focus...
Other than that, it was fine.
I'm sorry?
I said, other than that, the question would have been fine, except it had nothing to do with any issue in the case.
I'm not sure. I don't think it would have been fine because it didn't have anything to do with the case.
You're quite right.
Okay. But regarding the various other areas, we provided the court with unrebutted.
I'm just trying to let you know that we have already read the transcripts of the record.
All right. Well, then, Your Honor, I'll take that hint. I think the court properly granted summary judgment on the two issues. And again, I don't think there was any abuse of discretion which warranted reversal of the jury verdict. And I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Laffin.
Thank you. Regarding first, I have two points in rebuttal. First of all, regarding the Officer Ritt testimony, one thing that the my learned counsel across the bar forgot to say was that the motion in limine only limited that information in the case in chief, and that's in document 8. It's very clear. I mean, it says you shall not, introduce this evidence in this in the case in chief, in Hollins' case in chief. Hollins had rested at the point that he asked that question, and Attorney Barnes, who handled that case down there at the district court level, relied on the district court's prior ruling, written ruling on the motion in limine. So the question was not inappropriate, and the subject was open for questioning. Regarding Officer Leibel, I don't recall seeing anywhere in the record that Officer Leibel said it was safe to be there. He told Hollins to get out of here, and then when Hollins he actually testified at the trial that he moved on a little bit, began taking more pictures, and apparently that wasn't good enough for Mr. Leibel, and he used profanity and told him to get the blank out of here and threw him to the ground and so forth. But one thing to remember is that this Monell claim issue is at the summary judgment stage, and so you have to take Hollins' version of the facts in his favor, with all the inferences in his favor. And basically put this question to the jury about whether the city properly is training its officers. And without any other questions, I guess I will rest.
Well, thank you. We thank both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the second.